Picture this. You're 100 miles into a cross country. You filed VFR. The morning briefing showed scattered to broken clouds along your route, nothing the briefer flagged as a hard no-go. An hour after departure, the ceiling starts dropping. You descend from 3,000 feet to 2,000, then 1,500. You can still see ahead, but the visibility is compressing, and the clouds are getting closer to the deck. You tell yourself you'll turn around if it gets any worse. Then you're in a cloud. Your hand tightens on the yoke, your eyes snap to the windshield. There's nothing to see. You glance at the attitude indicator. It says you're in a bank, but you don't feel like you're in a bank. I'm Pattern on Traffic, Pattern here on Radio Hangar, and today we're going to spend some real time on one of the most reliably fatal scenarios in all of general aviation, inadvertent flight into instrument meteorological conditions, IMC. What causes it, what happens to the pilot inside it, and what you do if it ever happens to you. Before we go further, shout out to our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument, commercial, they've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. AviationSoul.com. All right, let's talk about why this scenario is so dangerous. The National Transportation Safety Board tracks what it calls continued VFR flight into instrument meteorological conditions as a separate accident category. And it does that because this accident type is both common and consistently fatal. The fatality rate is above 90%. 9 out of 10 pilots who end up flying a VFR aircraft into instrument conditions don't walk away. That number deserves a moment of silence before we move on. The reason the fatality rate is so high comes down to a physiological trap that is nearly impossible to escape without training. Spatial disorientation, and to understand why it's so dangerous, you need to understand how your brain decides which way is up. You have three systems feeding your brain orientation information: your visual system, your vestibular system, which lives in your inner ear, and your proprioceptive system, which is the pressure feedback from your seat and your limbs. In visual conditions, these three systems mostly agree with each other. You can see the horizon, you can feel gravity, and your inner ear is sensing your movement in space. They all point to the same answer. Take away visual reference by putting a pilot in a cloud, and suddenly the other two systems have to carry the full load. They are not up to the job. Your inner ear works through fluid in semicircular canals. Three canals, one for each axis of rotation. When you begin a turn, the fluid resists the movement and the canal registers the rotation. But after a few seconds, the fluid catches up with the canal wall and the signal stops. If you're in a sustained gradual turn, your inner ear tells your brain you're flying straight and level. Because as far as the inner ear is concerned, the rotation has ended. This is how the graveyard spiral develops. Let me walk through it step by step. A pilot enters IMC, usually while scud running, trying to stay beneath a lowering ceiling. The pilot is focused outside, looking for ground reference, and doesn't catch the aircraft entering a shallow bank. Maybe 5 or 10 degrees. The inner ear never registers it because the entry was gradual. The aircraft is now slowly turning. Because lift is no longer acting purely upward but partly sideways, the nose begins to drop to maintain total lift. Airspeed starts to increase. The pilot feels the G-load go up slightly. The body interprets an increase in G-load as climbing, not turning. The brain says the nose is high. We need to push forward. The pilot pushes forward. The turn continues, or tightens. Now the aircraft is in a spiral. Altitude is dropping. Airspeed is increasing. G-load is increasing. The whole thing is compressing, and through all of it, it still feels somewhere between straight and level and a shallow climb. The pilot then tries to pull back to arrest what now feels like a descent. Pulling back in a bank tightens the turn and increases the G-load further. The spiral steepens. This continues until the aircraft exceeds its structural limits, or until the pilot breaks out of the clouds near the ground, or until impact. The research on how quickly this unfolds is sobering. FAA safety publications have cited research suggesting that the average VFR pilot with no instrument training has approximately 178 seconds of useful flight after entering IMC before losing control. 178 seconds, that is about 3 minutes, not enough time to figure it out by feel. Just barely enough time to recognize what's happening and execute a specific trained response. Now, that number assumes a pilot who is just reacting. A pilot with even modest instrument experience, who knows what to look for and has a plan, has a much better chance, which is the entire point of today's conversation. Let me talk about prevention first, then procedure. These accidents almost always follow a pattern. The pilot didn't make one catastrophic decision. They made a series of small decisions, each of which seemed reasonable given the last one. The ceiling was at 3,000 feet, so they flew at 2,500 to stay under it. Then 2,000, then 1,500, then 1,000. Each step seemed small. At some point they were scud running at 800 feet with a mile of visibility and a cloud base they could reach up and touch. And at that point they were out of options. This is why personal weather minimums exist. Not the federal aviation regulations, your own minimums. The FAR set a floor. You are legally allowed to fly VFR in controlled airspace with a ceiling of 1,000 feet and 3 miles visibility. Legally allowed. That does not mean it's a good idea, especially for pilots who are still building experience. Many experienced pilots use a personal minimum significantly more conservative than the legal floor. 2,000 feet ceiling and 5 miles visibility as a baseline for cross-country VFR, at least until you've accumulated real experience in varying conditions. If you're a new private pilot building cross-country time, think hard about what your margins actually are before you accept conditions that are barely legal. The principle behind personal minimums is margin. Margin gives you time. Time gives you options. When you're right at your legal floor, the ceiling drops 200 feet and you're in trouble. When you have a 500-foot cushion, a 200-foot drop is a nuisance, not a crisis. The other piece of prevention is the 180 rule. The moment conditions start deteriorating, the moment the ceiling is lower than expected, the moment visibility is compressing, you turn around. Not when you're already scud running. When you first notice the trend, the 180 is hard to execute when you've been pressing on for 20 minutes. Sunk cost feels real. You're closer to your destination than you are to where you started. You tell yourself it might clear up ahead. These are exactly the mental traps that the NTSB accident reports describe. Again and again, here's something I do with students. We identify the turnaround condition before the flight on the ground, before any emotional momentum has built up. If I see broken cloud bases below 2,000 feet, I turn around. That decision is made on the ramp. Then, when the condition happens, you execute the decision you already made. No deliberation required because the deliberation is already done. Now, the emergency procedure. You're in the cloud. What do you do? First and only first, attitude. Get the wings level by reference to the attitude indicator. Get the nose to level flight, not a climb. Level, straight, and level flight. Do this before you do anything else. You cannot navigate, you cannot communicate, you cannot solve the problem if the aircraft is in a spiral. Wings level, nose level, right now. If you have any doubt about the attitude indicator, use the turn coordinator. The miniature airplane in the turn coordinator tells you whether you're turning and in which direction. Wings level on the turn coordinator, plus whatever input is needed to stop the descent. Small, deliberate inputs. Get the aircraft stabilized, set cruise power. A known stable power setting removes one variable and keeps you from complicating the picture with a pitch-power interaction. Second, once the aircraft is stable, radio and transponder. Squawk 7700. Get on the radio, guard frequency is 121.5 MHz. It is monitored by air route traffic control centers, approach facilities, and most military installations. Someone is listening. The call is simple. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Aircraft type. N number, VFR pilot in IMC, I need immediate assistance. Give your last known position, give your altitude, give the number of souls on board. I want to address something directly, because I know some pilots hesitate here. Declaring an emergency is not a violation. There is no certificate action that results from a VFR pilot entering IMC and calling for help. The FAA specifically encourages pilots to declare early, before the situation has fully deteriorated. The paperwork you may need to complete afterward is not a punishment, it is a small price. Controllers are trained for this. They will get a radar return on your transponder. They will identify your position and they will give you vectors. If there is an airport in range with a runway clear of terrain, they will navigate you to it. This has happened many times. VFR pilots have made it down through instrument conditions with radar vectors from approach control. It is possible, but only if you make the call. Third, accept help and do exactly what ATC tells you. Small, deliberate control inputs. Fly the heading they give you. Maintain the altitude they give you. Trust the instruments, not your body. Every single time your body tells you to do something different from what the instruments are showing, the instruments are right and your body is wrong. That is not a figure of speech. It is the literal physiological reality of spatial disorientation. Now, let me talk about something that sits right at the intersection of prevention and procedure, and it's the most underused resource in primary training: hood time. The airman certification standards for the private pilot certificate require 3 hours of flight by reference to instruments. 3 hours. That is enough to introduce the concept and meet the standard. It is not enough to become comfortable. The pilots who come out of primary training with the best realistic chance in an inadvertent IMC encounter are the ones who did more hood work than the minimum, not to become instrument pilots, just to become familiar, to feel what the scan actually feels like, to understand the lag between a control input and the attitude indicator's response, to experience the leans in a safe environment, with a safety pilot alongside watching the real horizon and making sure nobody flies into a mountain. If you're in training right now, ask your instructor for more hood time than the syllabus requires. If you're already certificated and haven't done hood work in a year or two, find a safety pilot. Sit in the left seat on a clear VFR day and fly under the hood for an hour. Straight and level. Turns to headings. Climbs and descents. Get reacquainted with the scan before you need it. It costs you fuel and a lunch. The Airman Certification Standards also expect a private pilot applicant to demonstrate aeronautical decision-making, including recognition of situations that require a divert or a turnaround. This is where that ACS requirement lives in real life. Not on the check ride. On the cross-country flight, when the weather is lower than forecast and you're trying to decide whether to press on. One more thing before we wrap this up. The VFR pilot who enters IMC and survives almost always does one thing right. They transition to instruments immediately. They do not continue looking outside for a horizon that isn't there. They do not try to feel for level flight. They go to the attitude indicator within the first few seconds, and they stay there. The pilots who don't survive often spend those first critical seconds looking outside, searching for something visual. Feeling the aircraft, by the time they go to instruments, the spiral is already developing and the corrections required are large, disorienting, and hard to execute correctly. The habit you want to build is immediate. Cloud equals instruments. Your eyes go to the panel the moment visual reference is gone. Not after you've tried the outside, right away. This is a habit you can build on every flight, every time you enter a cloud layer with proper instrument authorization, or every time you practice under the hood. Fly the aircraft first. Everything else comes after. The weather briefing, the personal minimums, the 180 rule, the hood time, those are all trying to keep you out of a situation where any of this matters. But if you end up in the gray, you now know the sequence. Wings level, power set, squawk 7700, 121.5 on the radio. Ask for help, trust the instruments, not your body. Get on the ground. Most of the accident data and physiological research I walked through today comes from NTSB accident analysis reports and the FAA's Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge. Both are free, both are worth your time. The NTSB accident reports in particular are hard to read, but they are the most honest instruction manual General Aviation has find us at radiohanger.com. I'm Pattern. Turn around early and fly with a little more margin than you think you need.